Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Lester Kemp, Chief Operating Officer at Technology Minerals, and Alex Stanbury, CEO. Welcome, gents. How's things?
Hi, Phil. Good to be here. Good, thank you.
Hi, Phil. All good.
Excellent. So obviously we've produced many podcasts looking at the battery recycling side of Techmins, or one part of the sausage machine, as Robin likes to use the analogy. But we've not taken a deep dive into the mining assets within the company's portfolio. Do you want to start with the US assets, Imperium and Blackbird, based in Idaho, Lester, please?
Yeah, certainly. So we have the largest contiguous land position in the Idaho Cobalt Belt. It strikes immediately south of the border with Jervois Mining's ICO project. We have two projects there. One's the Imperium license, which is around 13,000 acres. And then more recently, we purchased another license called the Blackbird Creek license, which covers around 3,000 acres. So in total, we've got about 16, 17,000 acres. It's very prospective. We haven't done a lot of work on the Imperium license, but the vendors of the Blackbird Creek have done quite a bit. We're quite excited. There's numerous prospects. And there is a non-compliant or non-JORC compliant resource on the property, and that hasn't been verified. So that's something that's quite exciting. And obviously, we'd like to drill that at some stage to just corroborate the grades and also the resource.
Very good. And obviously, in the past, I believe that there was a 10% or a sale of an MOU for a sale of 10% interest in the US cobalt copper project for something in the circa of £900,000. Presumably, there's a further option on that as well, is there, Lester?
That's right. As Alex probably said previously, there's an option for another 20% at the same rate. So another 20% for $1.8 million.
So, Lester, what's the situation then in America in terms of the cobalt? Is it like if we find cobalt in America, then it ain't leaving America? It's like sort of a specialized scenario and they have to pay a certain amount for it? Or what is the situation if it's actually found? It's found because it's there, obviously.
I think we'll just have to wait and see. But I think our projects, you know, we'll develop them to a certain stage. And then after that, I think we'd probably be on a target for other companies that are operating in the area, have smelters and you know, mining capacity. And I think we'd probably leave that particular question to them rather than ourselves. It fits in with our model of being a project generator. So picking up prospective ground, working them up to such a position that it attracts, you know, a bigger partner who can take the heavy work and take the projects into production. So I think that's probably where we see America.
And what ratio have we got in terms of likely scenario between cobalt and copper? Is it going to be predominantly copper with cobalt tacked on, or is it the other way around?
The Idaho Cobalt Belt actually can host a variety of mineral deposits, not just cobalt, but gold and copper. The Blackbird Creek license has a target called Copper Hill, and that particular target is copper rich, cobalt poor. Other parts of the license have copper and cobalt more or less, well, good grades of cobalt and reasonable grades of copper. So the mineralogy does change depending on the style of mineralization in the property. We've also identified a historic vein in the Imperium ground, which is an old gold silver vein, but we haven't done any work on that. So the mineralogy does change dramatically depending on the style of mineralization that you find within the belt itself.
And what is a significant percentage of cobalt? I mean, we know copper. I mean, it seems to be going down and down in terms of the percentage that's required to make it economical. You know, in Chile, they're talking about 0.2, 0.25, all becomes economical, and maybe even less than that ultimately as a percentage copper. So what is the scenario for cobalt? Obviously, there are many, many variables, so it's almost an impossible question, but we like to answer those impossible questions.
Yeah, I think if you look around at the other companies and their press releases, they tend to report grades of 0.1, 0.2% cobalt. So that's the sort of ballpark figure. We see no reason why we won't get those sort of grades on our licenses, because we know what Jervois reports from their sort of mine development to the northwest of us. And to the south of east of us, we know that Electra have the Creek deposit, and that they're putting out announcements around sort of 0.1, 0.2% cobalt.
And effectively, this cobalt is all on the same seam, basically, or the same fault, if you like.
Yeah, it all follows a strike direction. There are different styles of mineralization. Some can be disseminated, some not. So it does vary. But what you see at Jervois Mining's project and what you see at Electra's Iron Creek, we probably get the same style of mineralizations within our license area.
Okay, and as an investor, what would be the next thing that we're likely to see from this particular project?
I think that the focus will be on the Blackbird Creek project because it's more advanced. As I said earlier, it's got a historic non-JORC compliant resource on it that was carried out, I think, by Noranda in the past. So that needs to be verified. And also the mineralization needs to be extended. And I think we'd probably carry out some sort of geophysical survey, perhaps IP, to see how extensive the disseminated mineralization is there. So I think that would be our focus, going back to something that has a historic non-compliant resource.
And actually, yeah, how big was the non-compliant resource then at that stage?
It was about 20,000 tons. So we would want to go back there, test it further, do our own drilling, and then come up with our own JORC compliant resource.
So 20,000 tons of contained cobalt is not a small amount, I presume, in the market.
It is relatively small, but I think we can expand that. And the reason why is the work that was carried out by the vendors of the Blackbird Creek project, they obviously knew the history on the project, that Noranda had done a non-compliant resource there. And with the further work they did in terms of soil sampling and rock sampling, there's a clear pattern that shows that the mineralization that Noranda drilled extends along strike in both directions. So I think we're quite optimistic, but we just have to get on the ground. And normally you wouldn't really get onto the ground until sort of March, April, because it's in the highlands and you have snow cover. So we have to deal with the snow.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you get your skis on, you're not going to be drilling any holes. Yeah?
Exactly.
Very good. Very good. So that's America. What's the next one that you would want to cover? Because obviously we've got, I mean, if we go around the world, we're coming back around to Ireland, are we, is the next place that you would land on? Tell us a little bit about what's happening in Leinster.
Yeah, so we've got licenses immediately southwest of Dublin. We're very excited by a fairly recent license that we picked up called PLA 1597 in County Carlow. And there it's really interesting because the geologist who discovered the target there, he was walking around the field boundaries and was looking at the dry stone walls. And in the dry stone walls, he found boulders of spodumene, coarse spodumene and fine-grained spodumene, and also some pegmatites that didn't have any spodumene. But we've done an extensive lithogeochemical survey. We've found spodumene float in the license area that grades up to 3.75% dilithium oxide, which is pretty high grade. So we've got two target areas there on PLA 1597. One is called Knockeen, where we recently took 56 samples. 41 of those samples were greater than 1% dilithium oxide. And out of those 40 samples, 20 graded above 2%. And then after those 20, two graded over 3%. So with the highest at 3.75. So we're really excited about that. The work that the guys have done on the ground have clearly identified three discrete areas where we would want to target with some initial scout drilling.
And again, just for investors, what is a good grade for this lithium dioxide?
Well, there was a company that was recently announced some lithium grades much further to the north of us, which were interesting, shall we say, in terms of the grades are much, much lower than ours. But most mining companies tend to announce anything over sort of 1% lithium dioxide.
Okay. But lithium in itself is going to be in huge demand over the next period of time. Obviously, we've already seen that with the price of lithium in the last sort of 12 to 24 months. It's gone crazy, really.
It has, yes.
I mean, what is a separation process? Is it quite a simple process to separate the oxide away from the lithium, Lester?
Yeah, I mean, so the lithium products, some are stable, some are unstable, so you've got to use them fairly quickly. Some you can't store for too long. But we're not at that stage yet. We have had a lot of interest from other parties. We had one particular company came to site, got so excited, they asked to go into the local town to pick up a suitcase so they could just fill it with more spodumene. Obviously, they've gone off. They're all covered by an NDA, and they've done some bench work on it. So we'll get those results shortly and probably be able to answer that question in better detail then. I think we're really, really encouraged by the results and the high grade. And if you have a look on our website, you might see some pictures of the, you know, we've got 1 ton boulders that are just solid spodumene. Yeah. So it's really, really exciting. And the farmer, the local farmer, is really friendly, very helpful. And he's helped us, you know, with other farmers in the area. So that it's great, really.
Yeah, it's a good safe jurisdiction, isn't it? So moving now to obviously Spain, northwestern Spain, the Asturmet copper, cobalt, nickel asset. Do you want to go through that? Because there was quite a good upgrade. I think, remembering the grab sampling that was done, there were and the reported assays from 1% to 28% copper, they were the kind of standout results, I remember.
Somebody drop a few coins in there, is that why it's 28%? <All right. laughs>
Yeah, look, it's northern Spain is also very exciting. It's in the Asturias region, just south of a town called Oviedo, or city called Oviedo. We have a very good rapport with the ministry and the people there. We have one license granted so far. We've had it for 3 years. Those 3 years came up as an anniversary last June, and we submitted a report on all the work that we'd carried out. The ministry now extended that particular license for another 3 years without actually cutting down any area of the license. So it's in high ground as well. Access during the winter, you know, it's a bit tricky when there's snow and ice about. But it is a very old historic mine. And yeah, we're really excited. The grades that we've had underground have been very good. And the next stage really is we're putting together all the lithogeochemical data and the structural data, and we're going to put it into a 3D model. That's already underway, and that will highlight potential drill targets for us. Our main concern is obviously if we put a drill program together, we don't want the drill to have any trouble drilling and then finding an open cavity from historic working. So we want to make sure that our three-dimensional model is very accurate, so it doesn't cause any drilling problems. And yeah, the plan is to potentially drill sometime this year, you know, and produce, you know, a few meters of high-grade nickel, copper, and cobalt.
So, Lester, historically, that was mainly a copper mine, or what was it historically?
Yeah, it was a copper stroke nickel mine. All the cobalt was chucked to the side, wasn't really mined for cobalt. And then the vendors of the property did a search to try and find out where the Romans got all their copper and nickel in the past. And it highlighted this particular historic mine or province as well. And that led us to picking up the project.
So there is quite a lot of slack and rubble about that's got cobalt in it, then, you think?
There is, but I don't think it's enough for us to put together and reprocess. But it does give us a very good indication of the past grades. You know, we have sampled the spore heaps, so it gives us a very good indication of the grades and also the type of mineralogy that we would expect to find when we start drilling in earnest.
Okay. So from the perspective of that, you are hoping that that is going to be a project that moves on in size, okay, just so everybody has a grasp, especially me. We talk about Idaho, we talk about Ireland, we've talked about Spain. Which one of the three is the biggest? Not necessarily going to be the most financially beneficial, but which has the most asset, if you like, you know, as in metal in ground, you think?
Metal in ground, that's a hard one. I think it's probably Spain and closely followed by America, but Alex may differ in his opinion. But for me, I think the most exciting one currently is Ireland, just purely because of the huge interest in lithium and sourcing lithium, and the fact that we're getting, you know, all these boulders in the dry stone walls that indicate that there is a very proximal source of pegmatite that contains lithium, and lithium of a very reasonable grade, you know, grading up to 3.5.
Does this mean you're going to be going around the farmers and knocking down all the dry stone walls and sticking them in?
You know, when we first put our press release out about finding lithium in the dry stone walls, we monitored the social media, and there was social media saying, oh, this company is going to mine all the dry stone walls. There won't be any more dry stone walls in Ireland. And we're going, no, it's not that. It just gives us an indication of what's beneath the ground. So the dry stone walls will stay very much apart. But it did make us chuckle a little bit.
Indeed.
I guess we'll come on to Alex for your what is your opinion? Obviously, you're going to be biased on these assets within the portfolio.
I'm excited about all of them. But yes, I think the results we're getting recently out of Ireland really are very, very interesting. And it should garner a lot of interest going forward and allow us to, certainly on the global battery metals, we've got the joint venture already where they're vended in and spending another £500,000. And then we have a separate subset of licenses as well, which we are deciding what to do with at the moment in terms of joint venturing. But yeah, they are fantastic results. And again, Spain, you know, we've got a historic resource there, and the work that's being done there is really good. And we're looking forward to pushing that forward and getting some drilling done. But I think that'll attract a really interesting joint venture partner shortly as well, and take the funding off of our books.
I mean, it's quite interesting because you're in quite a unique position, aren't you, with a suite of assets in various locations around the world in the mining side, and then obviously you've got your USP within the EV, you know, the battery recycling space. And only recently we heard the news that Andrew Forrest, the CEO of Fortescue, also owner of Wyloo Metals, had obviously invested in Williams Advanced Engineering, the part of the Formula E team, the technologies in the EV, and he's actually building a gigafactory near us down the road in Oxfordshire. So, I mean, how does it feel being in this space now? It must be very exciting, right?
It is. It is. I mean, you know, we're obviously big backers of our dual track approach. We obviously want to do as much recycling as possible, but there's only a limited amount of feedstock in the market at the moment. And that all needs to be recycled in order to go back into the gigafactories. Obviously, the British Vault news has been a shame for this country, but someone will pick up that mantle and push it forward.
And I guess it goes to show how important it is not just to have the manufacture of the new batteries, but how important the whole black mass is in the recycling side of things, especially, as you say, if British Vault has unfortunately gone into administration now, that's one less factory there that's going to be there to supply the builds.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need those battery manufacturing plants in this country to support the vehicle manufacturing. Otherwise, it'll leave, and that would be a real shame for this country. We need a full battery supply chain, which we're doing our best to try and plug two gaps in it at least. And we're really excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, the British Vault thing has gone into administration, but it hasn't gone away. This is this would be my thought. Someone's going to pick that up. They've done a lot of work already. And just because they didn't have the cash, I don't know for sure it's not going to happen. But we will see. Obviously, that's something else to wonder. So I know it's the imponderable question, but we can't do a podcast without asking you, Alex. EA, when's it coming?
Well, we're in... The good news is, I suppose, we're in continuous conversation with the guys there on both projects. They're in the hands of different teams. We know now that we're at the top of the list for Tipton, so that's the lead acid. Just before Christmas, we were number 20. We're now in the hands of a human, and we've been having good conversations. We're expecting any feedback this week, but again, timelines we can't promise, but that's what we're being told. And then as long as there's nothing sort of coming out of that, then we should be looking at a license this quarter. It could be really any time, but they are extremely busy and backed up, and don't give us timelines from which to work. So we can,
no, but it's that's obviously a positive move if you're in the hands of a human being, because before you were just on a desk, weren't you? So the reality is absolutely. Now you were the human being. So
it is very positive. And then on Wolverhampton, again, been out for consultation. They've spoke to us last week and told us that we should have a review of any comments from within the EA this week. And again, hopefully looking at an end of February, March timeline for that. But, you know, we sit here excited to get it finished and to start and to turn the machines on. And the good news is that now we've had the consultation back. There are the final little tweaks here and there that we can finish on the capex side, you know, just tweaks to the fire suppression system and various other things within the plant that are ancillary to the actual operation of the plant, but we didn't want to get done until we heard back from fire, etc., because it's much like a planning application when you have to go out for consultation. So now that's been done, we can get it finally totally finished, ready for switching on, hopefully in this quarter.
Very good. So from my perspective anyway, I'm looking at Teck Minerals, and from what you've said, Lester, in terms of these assets, each one of these assets could easily be a small cap company on AIM, and each one of those mining stocks could easily be 4, 5, 6, 7 million pounds, especially the way that the lithium one is looking at the minute. And you know, Teck Minerals with a market capitalization of less than £20 million at the minute, that's obviously going to go up a bit when Recyclers comes on board. But for me, the mining is almost valued at the market capitalization. So everything in the recycling is actually just free right now. I mean, obviously, it depends which way you want to look at it, but that's the way it is. So
no, you're correct. I mean, I think to jump in, but just to remind people as well that we sold 10% of Idaho for $900,000, which values the Idaho assets at $9 million. And that was before Jervois had started operating, which they have now as well. And we surround them downstrike. So, you know, and there's certainly been renewed interest in Idaho since they've come online, and we field calls regularly about those assets. So
Idaho and the cobalt there could be worth, you know, maybe anything from 50 to 100% of the market capitalization currently at Teck Minerals. Now, obviously, somebody's got to pay it and you've got to want to sell it, which you don't want to do. But I think it just gives people a good guidance. So the final question I'll ask you, because we didn't really talk about it, is Cameroon. Now, Cameroon was there when you first came to market, and there was issues then that they were supposed to be licensed by last year, or in fact 2021, I think it was December. Then there was a problem because of the legal requirements in Cameroon. So what is the state of play at the minute? Because there's still shares to be given to those people if they sort it out, or is that finished now?
No, that needed to be sorted out by the Christmas period last year, and it wasn't. Not this year, this is the year before. So there was a timeline on that to get it regularized. And it wasn't regularized, and it still isn't regularized. We're almost there. It's been a very long process of having to switch licenses into a local company there, one which has just had a very sad timeline slowdown on it. The Cameroon have just lost their Minister of Mines on the weekend.
Yeah, we saw that. Oriel Resources put a reach out to say that the Minister of Mining in Cameroon had passed away.
It's very sad, and not something that was, I think he was in otherwise in good health, supposedly. So it was a shock to everyone. So we sit quiet in a way to see how it all unfolds.
Okay. So Lester, tell us a bit about the mining side of things in Cameroon. Obviously, frustration has occurred, I presume, for the last 18 months or more. But tell us what it actually is there and what's the possibilities.
Yeah, so we have 5 licenses, each of 500 square kilometres each. So that's 2,500 square kilometres of ground. Basically, we're looking for an identical target to the Geovic and Kamuna mine, which is probably one of the largest nickel laterite deposits, certainly in Africa. So that's the sort of target we're after. We know that the area has just recently been flown by the government. They've done some airborne geophysics, and we're hoping to get hold of that data. If we get hold of the data, it'll highlight sort of hotspots for us to go and send our field teams to go and target and do some sampling. And then if we get results from those sampling that are similar to the Geovic Bunkamuna mine, then it's, you know, all systems go. We have also been approached by a couple of companies in the past who've expressed an interest for when those licenses are, you know, officially ours. So we can evaluate what to do with them, whether we want to do that initial work ourselves and add some value, or whether we want to just farm it out to another company. But yeah, we're looking forward to seeing the airborne data, and that will target, you know, the field sampling team and what we do this year.
Yeah, that's good. Oriel Resources is big on Cameroon. They're the gold scenario, and they also got a huge amount of land pegged out as well and different things as well. So I think Cameroon is starting to become a destination, a mining destination, because I think they changed the legislation as well to make it easier for everybody. And yeah, so so that one is obviously a bit more down the road than some of the others.
Yes.
Because of the delays, and then obviously it's in exploration.
But we've got teams on standby. As soon as the licenses are granted, we've got teams that will go in and start sampling. So, you know, we're just waiting to press the button.
Alex, any last words other than please give me a license?
We have an awful lot going on. We're very excited. All of our mining assets and exploration assets are moving along nicely. As I say, Cameroon is at that point the outlier. It's been a little frustrating this year, but it will come right. And when it does, we're ready to go. And we've got plenty else to focus on at the moment anyway. And then on the recycling side, yeah, we're looking forward to turning both the machines on. And hopefully that'll be this quarter, and that'll be a real game changer for us. But obviously, none of us want to be in a position where we're burning cash. And we want to be creating it. So good. Simple as that, really.
Very good. Lester Kemp and Alex Stanbury, Technology Minerals, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.